and welcome to the Scotchcast for the week of December 14th, 2014. My name's Thurpleton, and join with me is self-confessed cynic.
Whoa!
Hey, how you doing?
It's just us. It's kind of crazy.
It's just us. End of the year kind of thing, so a lot of people got finals happening. I know you are... You're still in Australia right now, right?
Yes, I am.
But you are traveling.
3 days from being on a plane to India for the holidays. So I'm in Sydney, which is away from my stuff, which means I'm on a laptop hooked up to a PlayStation headset. And the positive of that, in my opinion, the best change to how we do podcasts since we started doing podcasts, is I can do this podcast while lying down.
Yes, we are. neither of us are sitting in a chair right now.
Yeah, in fact, we are doing opposites, as it were. Like I kind of feel like that's pushed the intro out of the way. I want to hear about your crazy life decision that you made.
Yes, my crazy life decision. It's just, and then people are doing finals. So basically, it's just the two of us. We just want to get something out because it's been a while. Thanks again to Shinboy for doing the albums of the year. Yeah, the music show.
Yeah. I have no idea what was that about. Like, I haven't listened to it. I don't even know if he's posted it. I probably don't like
he has posted the music. It. It's been uploaded.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I'd hate everything they mention.
So. While not a huge fan of his music, I definitely will listen to it because he said he put a lot of heart into editing it. So I want to check that out. My life decision. I am standing in front of my desk because my desk is now a standing desk.
This is your home desk. This is the desk at your house.
Yes, it is.
That's crazy to me that you'd be doing that as a standing desk. That, it makes sense, like, if you go to work, you have a standing desk at work, and that's good for you because you don't spend most of the day sitting down on your ass. So, but home is the place where you sit and relax.
Backing up, the reason why people do standing desks at all, but, you know, predominantly at work is when most people do them, is it's been, like, studies have shown that sitting down for long periods of time, you know, like 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, or 5 days a week, I think it's like it's either a heart condition or it's basically your body is having to do less work, which you think would be okay. But because it's doing less work over an extended period of time constantly, it doesn't like it almost weakens to that state by naturally. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense to you?
It's like astronauts, how they don't have to stand all the time with gravity, so they have muscular deterioration. The muscles that are used to stabilize your body in a standing position are weakened if you're sitting all the time.
Yeah, basically everyone who has a job in a cubicle farm is turning into the giant, like, baby people of WALL-E.
Yeah, which I'm fine with.
Yeah. And while I do have a job that is not sitting down, it's very much standing around, standing, walking around, all that. As soon as I get home, I am pretty much sitting
down. So you never
down.
Sit anymore. You just don't sit. You've changed into this being who spends his entire day. All you do is sit and lie down.
I sit on the couch every now and then, like to watch a movie or to play something on the PS4.
So your average sitting time a week is like 5 hours.
It has dropped considerably. Yes,
that's incredible.
And it was
that's
a thing.
Just weird.
It's also the mentality of it's beyond the health, you know, benefits. When you're standing up, you are there's less preventing you from, like, you know, oh, I need to walk to the other room to get something. Oh, I need to, you know, throw this away. I need to, like, get, like, the idea of getting up and going somewhere. Getting up is half the problem. So I've been much more active lately as well.
Yeah, that's definitely an activity thing. I admire this interesting existence you've forged for yourself, and I wonder how long you'll do it for. I suspect it's going to be like a life thing. It sounds to me that you're liking it, and that's just, that's weird.
I don't know if I'm liking it. I mean, like, it's definitely been a neat thing to talk with people about, but I've been having it for about a week, and the first few days hurt a lot.
Because, you're never sitting anymore. Sitting is, I know it's not good for you, but you're not made to stand all the time. Like, that's not normal. Humans are lying down, lounging creatures for half of it.
I sleep. So there's that part covered.
That doesn't count.
I mean, it's believed we're supposed to, we, like, humans as a species are meant to be running constantly as well.
No, we're a nomadic species. That's, well, okay, we are the most, what was it, the most efficient, or at least the most successful long-distance journeyers on Earth.
Yeah, well, one of the beliefs is that we would just outrun our prey. We would run them to, they would be to the point of exhaustion.
And we'd just still be going.
Yes.
Yeah. We're the most, we have the highest endurance of any land creature, which is something that people strongly overlook in terms of a human quality, because, like, oh yeah, the humans are successful because of our brains. That's true, but we're also successful because we were able to spread ourselves so wide. And that's also because we were able to essentially walk. You can walk if you're, assuming you're not a fat asshole, pretty much on end. You can pretty much walk all day from morning till night, as long as you go at a steady pace.
Yep.
And not tire. And not many animals can actually do that. That's not a thing that the animal kingdom has had, aside from humans and a couple other creatures who we surprised domesticated, because they're the only things that can keep up with us. So, like, dogs are only our pets because they're one of the few animals out there that can keep up with us. It's kind of crazy. Same with horses and smaller creatures as well. So cool. Anyway, so, yeah, aside,
like, I've been enjoying it.
Standing up now?
Yeah.
That's, oh my god, it's, I can't even imagine that.
When I'm doing something with a controller, like, I haven't been doing too many things with a controller soon, but I'll usually just sit on the couch and do that. But yeah, mouse and keyboard standing. Yeah.
I'm shaking my head. You can't hear this, we'll see this, but
no, it's, yeah. I'm imagining you shaking your head.
I just couldn't do it. It doesn't even make sense to me. Like, sitting down is one of my favorite things. Sitting down and playing video games for, like, because doesn't this affect how long you can play in a single stretch? Like, don't you get tired after a while? Or you sound like you said it was painful for the first week. Like, what do you mean by that?
Like, okay, going through all the different effects. It's kind of like when smokers quit smoking. Legitimately, okay. My lower back was aching more just from standing. Like my whole lower body was, what was stressed out. I think my feet were swollen for, like, you know, a little bit of a time. It's not, like, that bad, but just, like, I noticed little things as they went on.
Yeah.
Everything now is more or less back to normal.
Hmm. Yeah. I am interested in how this will pan out in the long term. It's sadly something we can only find out as time progresses.
Yeah.
I hope we do, like, a more standing Thurbleton check-ins.
I'm hoping to check in with it. Like, the other goal is, like, you know, if I'm standing, I'm less in the mentality to sit down and play games and more to actually work on coding, or just to leave and go to a cafe and work on coding.
Do you stand at cafes?
No, but I'll sit down in a cafe and relax.
Okay. Are you a sittist? Do you stand only?
Yes, I stand and be counted. Ugh.
You look down upon all us sitters. From your high vantage point.
Can we move on to story time, or do we just want to skip that?
Story time? What's story time?
Story time is the computer and getting the... when I went to take the computer out of the desk, the, you know, amount of dust that it kicked up stung my eyes. I think I told you this. I was like, all right, I got to get a can of air. I'd forgotten what it was like to have a cat. It's not even my cat. It just hangs out in my room all the time.
So, how long has that? How long has that computer been there? And what? How much dust are we talking about? Are we talking about, like, literally billowing levels of dust? Because that's not right. That's not normal.
It wasn't billowing, but it was there was a definite layer.
Oh God! Oh, that's pretty normal. Especially if a lot of fans in your PC.
I think all in all, by the time I finished cleaning everything out, it was effectively, if you had some really dirty clothes, like, if you have listeners who have a pet, if you had, like, if you wait, like, a couple weeks to do laundry and ran it through, that amount of lint, that, like, tangible, like, you can clump together, that has come out of the dryer. That was all the, you know, dust and whatnot that was in my case when I cleaned it out.
Jeez. So essentially you got some compressed air, like a smart person, and then cleaned out your case, is what you're saying.
Yes, like I went to get a can of air, and while walking by, it's cleaned up a little. It's been better, but I'm not sure if that is in relation to cleaning out the dust, or while I was walking by to get a can of air at the Best Buy, I happened to notice that I could get a 1 terabyte hard drive for like $50.
Yeah.
And most of my money is going to Christmas shopping and shipping those things to family abroad. But I was able to swing that. And so I got a 1 terabyte hard drive and transferred a bunch of games from the C drive to, since I had to unplug my optical drive, I've named it the
I'm shaking my head.
I used, no, just wait. It's the best part. It's the D drive, or as I've named it, the sad face drive.
D colon?
Yep.
I guess?
Yep. Well, because it's C colon as well. So if you look at it on my computer, it's D, it's D colon.
You're a piece of garbage. Okay, sure. I can't believe this is... I cannot believe that this is the first time you've had a hard drive as your D drive. As a person who has frequently had computers with up to 7 to 8 hard drives in them. Not anymore, but back in the day.
Good lord, man.
This is hilarious to me. Okay, cool. Are you running SSD and a physical disk now? Or
no, I don't have an SSD. I can't afford it yet because I spent all my money on Christmas gifts.
Well, you know what? That's a pretty good excuse. Okay, yeah.
Just like earlier this year, it was between getting a PS4 or getting a new video card.
Hmm. Which did you choose? You chose PS4, didn't you?
I chose the PS4.
I think that was a pretty good decision.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, like I as a person who has PC gamed a lot recently, I think that at least with AMD, it's still a pain in the ass. Like, PC gaming is still not all the way there, and I really love the PS4 controller and the fact that you have to run a cable to your PC to get to run, unless you get a Bluetooth dongle, and that I couldn't be bothered buying a Bluetooth dongle. It's just, yeah, there is good reasons to have a PS4. It's sad that the games are more expensive. That's the main thing.
Actually, two really dumb things about the PS4. Okay, one not dumb thing is just being now having a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Which has been nice. I've been making use of that and getting some Blu-ray discs. But also, having played Spelunky on the PS4, I was initially against it, but have since really gotten behind the using the D-pad on the PS4, which
so good.
They're their own individual buttons, opposed to the Xbox, which is one whole circle.
It's a piece of shit. Like, the Xbox D-pad is a horrible offense to gaming, because it was the dominant platform last gen. Some people are used to this absolute trashy D-pad the fact that was the norm for such a long time, and people forgot the greatness of Nintendo and Sony D-pads, it's sad. But yeah, I'm happy that PS4 is now dominating, because that thing is slick. I really like the DualShock 4 in pretty much every way. And the D-pad is nice on that. It's not as good as the Vita D-pad, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. So I whenever I want to play Spelunky, I'll usually boot up the PS4 and play with that, because I still haven't gotten around to getting a Bluetooth adapter for the tower.
Yeah.
But then just
yeah.
One other just shake your head little thing is while watching some of the guys on Giant Bomb play Matt Your Friends. I haven't got any friends over to play that yet here, but I do have it. I wasn't able to map the buttons to the Xbox controller, like, button thing, but I was able to mentally map them to Spelunky buttons. So it's like, all right, to move your right arm, rather than press the Y button, you need to press the rope up button. You need to press the jump. Okay, now press the whip key. Okay.
You then he's are got crazy.
That's funny. We should probably talk about video games. Story time is getting a bit too long.
I guess we kind of have started talking about video. All right, so thumbs in.
What have you been up to? You played. Let's just jump right into Destiny, eh?
I need to talk about something else before we get to
it. Oh, okay. Please, go ahead.
Exodus, Gods and Kings.
Sorry, what?
Which I watched yesterday at the cinema, starring Sir Christian Bale, Batman, as Moses, is a surprisingly enjoyable movie.
The crap is this? I didn't even know this existed. Directed by Ridley Scott. All right,
it's the new movie. It's the new Christian Bale movie that's out. New Christian Bale / Ridley Scott movie that's out now. It is literally about Moses. And hey, what if Moses was like the Pharaoh's childhood friend who was a general in the Pharaoh's armies and then got disassociated with them because the Pharaoh found out he was Hebrew. And so Moses goes off and leads a rebel assault against essentially Egypt as a whole until God steps in and goes, hey, now let me handle this, and calls him the plagues.
Okay, so a slight reinterpretation of... All right, yeah, sweet, okay.
It's one of those movies where the writing was laughably bad. It wasn't even, I guess, a little bad. It was absolute silliness. Like, let's rewind a bit. I watched this movie with my friends. One of my friends is a history major, so I knew this was going to be great. Like, it was my first day back in Sydney after, like, not seeing them for about 3 months. And I wanted to go, okay, let's watch a bad movie together. But like, hey, that Exodus movie's out. It's going to be bad. Let's watch that. So he went in, and we specifically had my history friend in the center. And the movie opens with the pyramids in the background and then building the sphinxes. Anyone who knows, I believe, unless I'm horribly mistaken, the Sphinxes and the pyramids
were... Fairly different time periods.
Fairly different time. Yeah, a little bit separated in terms of time. So within the first shot of the movie, it's like, hey, we're taking a little bit of creative license with this. Fast forward to them using Roman military tactics in Egypt against essentially hordes of enemies and wearing steel armor... steel scale. Moses / Batman / Christian Bale is wearing.
Just call him Batman, please.
Batman is wearing like 15th century scale armor that's clearly like outclassed. Like the enemies, which are using steel weapons as well for some reason, except for some of them who are using bronze weapons, and I don't even ask me who's using what and why, because there's just no consistency whatsoever. If this was the real world, he would essentially be able to tank a whole army with that armor, because it required so many years of... Anyway, you can see where I'm coming from. Just in terms of like historical accuracy, respect of the text it's coming from, because it's barely like... there's a part of the movie where, and spoilers, Bible, it's been around for a while. So Moses sees a burning tree in the mountains. And at least as far as my history friend's concerned, and I have read the Bible myself, but I'm pretty sure this is the case. He does that well after they cross the Red Sea. But, the movie happens, there's a storm, and he's walking up a mountain. And I turn to my friend and go, he's going to see the burning tree. And he's like, no, that's stupid. He has to do it after crossing the Red Sea. It's like a whole thing with the faith of man and God. There's like a reason for like that kind of stuff. And I called it. He just meets the tree. He meets... All right. So God / Metatron / Uriel is played by an 8-year-old kid. So yeah. So essentially Christian Bale climbs a mountain. It gets hit by a landslide, wakes up being buried in mud and being talked to by an 8-year-old child who appears to be either Uriel, Metatron, or God, and is essentially asked to lead the Hebrew people in a war against Egypt. And there's a burning tree there. I don't know. They take some licenses. But the weird thing is, the performances people put in, like, the actors seem to have actually given a shit in the recording of this movie. So even though the writing is fucking terrible, none of it is accurate to any of the texts involved, it's actually pretty enjoyable. I don't know. It's pretty fun. I'd watch it. I wouldn't watch it again, but I'd recommend if you have, like, free movie tickets and time to spend, that it's not bad.
It's been a while since I went to religion class, but I'm fairly certain that your friend is crazy and Moses really? Saw the burning bush first and Ooh. Then went to Pharaoh and be like, let my people go.
Awesome.
And then when he finally relented after all the plagues and said, all right, get out of here. Mm-hmm. Then they went to the Red Sea, crossed it, parted waters. And Pharaoh chases after him and then it crushes him.
Nice. That's awesome. Also,
it's like the three people listening who did know that are finally like, thank God.
Yeah, I'm happy about that because I called it and I was like, hey, that's burning tree time. He's like, no, that's after. Anyway, whatever. That aside, so hey, maybe this isn't as inaccurate as it could have been. Go figure.
I'm looking at the list of actors and I just noticed Ben Kingsley. I think this is like the third movie Ben Kingsley has starred in that is related to this time period of like Moses, let my people go kind of thing.
I wouldn't be surprised. But I just really wanted to say that Old Testament God is kind of an asshole, I have to say. And the fact that both Moses and the Pharaoh of this movie tank in no uncertain terms, Old Testament God. So essentially the flood waters come back in after after the party of the Red Sea. So the sea comes back in. And so Moses on his black horse, don't ask me how they got horses, and the Pharaoh on his white horse are in the center of the Red Sea as tidal waves come in.
I don't remember that happening in the books.
And they're like discoursing, and then they both get hit by a tidal wave. You see Moses like get slammed against the rocks at the bottom of the Red Sea.
He'll be fine.
And then he just kind of walks out of the water. And same with the Pharaoh. That movie's great.
I'm the one shaking my head.
I thought that if you go in and expect it to be stupid fun, and I've said this about a couple movies in the past. It's actually pretty enjoyable. I'd watch it. Anyway, that's the first thing out of the way. I'm happy we got the burning tree thing sorted. There was a goat thing as well. Yeah, he follows goats into the mountains and there's a burning tree. That's how I remember it. I don't remember when it was, and I thought it would be before, or a friend said it was after. Anyway, whatever. I don't care. I'm not Christian. Aside from that, I have been playing video games.
That's good. At least you've been playing video games.
Yeah. What are we going to talk about first? All right, so Destiny is still a thing. Destiny is still a thing. The expansion came out. If you have people you play Destiny with and they're interested in the raid, I think it's worth it. So it's 40. It's like $40 in Australian buckaroonies.
Is that for that one or for the season pass?
Or both. For the season pass. Yeah. So you get this and the next one.
That doesn't sound as bad then.
Yeah, but the problem is, in some ways, it's a problem because if you don't buy it, you lose access to some things you previously would have had access to, which I don't think is the right way of doing things. Like, for example, weeklies and so on weren't even doable by people who hadn't purchased the expansion this week. And those are things that like have been around for a while.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, because they added stuff from the first expansion into the rotation, people will not get access to them because they might get the expansion content.
Not even that. Like,
rather than make two rotations.
Yeah, it's even beyond that. Like, instead of when the expansion hit, you couldn't even do any of the weeklies or dailies because you had to do a quest line to get to them, which I'm pretty sure anyone can do. I'm pretty sure that's available to anyone, whether you have expansion or not. But then after you go through this, like, 2.5/, like, because it's pretty hard, like, especially if you try to solo it, the 2.5 or so hour quest line, and you don't have the expansion. Like, you get to the end of it, and you just like hit against the wall because it's like a locked mission that you can't even do because you don't have the expansion. Like, this is, and yeah, you're right. Like, they don't have two rotations, like one for non-expansion people, one for expansion people, because that's too much effort. So they just added the new missions to the rotation. So now there's many days during the week or month that, like, weeks where people who don't have the expansions just won't be able to do stuff for, like, the whole time. And then you have the second problem, which is the gear, like, gear shifting. So level 30 was the previous maximum. Level 32 is the current maximum. Previously, if you bought all the vendor gear, you could get to level 29. So you'd have to get raid gear to get to level 30. But now the new cap's 32, so all the vendor gear got buffed. So now you can just buy vendor gear to get to level 31. So even though people put, like, 50 or so hours to get to level 30 before, now you can just buy vendor gear and leapfrog them to be level 31.
So this is essentially the first World of Warcraft expansion, like the Burning Crusade, exactly. The joke, green is the new purple.
Yeah, exactly. Like, green's the new purple. And it's like all the new stuff is instantly outmoding the old stuff, which is fine. Because I actually support that. I think that it's garbage that some people paid the money.
I support that too, except for the fact that you're just going up two levels.
Yeah.
And just making sure, if you take all of your gear off, you're back at level 20, right?
It's, yes. But it's kind of... It's weird. It's weird because it's levels in Destiny don't work like normal games, because that two level difference is actually a huge difference in how the maths in the game works. So if you're two levels lower than the enemy, you do half the damage and they do twice as much damage to you. If you're three levels below the enemy, you can't damage them at all and they do full damage to you, like massive damage to you. And if you're one level below the enemy, you do like 25% less damage. And only when you get to the same level as the enemy do you do the same damage as, like, normal damage to the enemy. So being three levels, like, being level 29 makes the raid pretty much impossible. So yeah, they kind of needed to buff it to 31. But it's this thing where you put 50 to 100 hours into getting gear to do it, like, to get to level 30, and now you just buy gear to be able to do it. Now, after 3 days of the expansion coming out, my whole guild in that game is level 31. And now we're looking at spending hundreds of hours to get to level 32. But now we know that this is how they do it. We're just like, well, why are we even going to bother? Because the next expansion is in February, and that's going to raise the level cap again to potentially level 34, level 35. And so we know already that the vendor gear there is going to be better than the raid gear now. So why would you even bother getting the raid gear, especially if you could already complete the raid in an hour?
Because what are you going to do between now and February? every day, you got to do the raid.
So it's like, yeah, like, why are we even bothering? Let's just fuck around. And so, and it's made even worse by the fact that most of the new items they added, except for two, are shitter than the old items. So
what?
So like they added all these exotics to the game, right? So the new rocket. So okay, the best weapon in the game is a rocket launcher called Gjallarhorn, which is a pretty fucking cool name. Well, I think Gjallarhorn is the actual way of saying it. It's Gjallarhorn. It's named after the three wolves that eat the world, the moon, and I believe the sun, the sky, or in Norse mythology. So it's like this awesome looking, like, gold and white fucking rocket launcher with wolves running along it. And its power is when you fire a rocket, the rocket explodes and it shoots off all these mini rockets that track to targets as well. But if the one target you shot it at isn't dead, they just curve back in and shoot and kill that dude. So essentially it's a rocket where each rocket you shoot is twice as powerful. So essentially, easily the most damaging weapon in the game, to the point where the two most powerful weapons in the game are Gjallarhorn, the new version of it, that's slightly more increased in max damage because they upgraded exotics with the expansion. And the second most powerful weapon in the game is Gjallarhorn, the old version of the weapon, which is slightly less powerful. And that's it. Like, it's the top two.
I need you to back up a sec. What was the first name and what was the second name?
So it was Galahorn is the number one most powerful weapon in the game, and number two most powerful weapon in the game is Galahorn, the same weapon, which is slightly less powerful because it's not expansion.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
So before, when I was like, wow, that's a really cool name, nice job, and then it was just like, oh, they couldn't think of a better name than the wolves that destroy the earth and the moon, and okay.
I'm misunderstanding. It is the same weapon. So what they did was, the current weapons we have max out at 300 damage. That's the attack cap on the weapons. But what you can do is if you find it or you pay for the upgrade, there's new versions of all the old weapons that have the new damage cap. So you can wait for the weekly vendor to come around. You pay like an exotic shard, 7,000 glimmer, and the weapon itself to get the upgraded version. So essentially what they're saying is all those awesome exotics you previously had are still viable going forward, which is a good thing, right? But that means that essentially you have two versions of every weapon, every exotic weapon in the game. You have Galahorn and Galahorn, the new version of Galahorn and the old version of Galahorn. That's what I meant by the top two weapons of the game are just the new version of that weapon and the old version of that weapon. The new weapons they added are things like dragon.
I don't know if this is a good thing, but keep going.
I think it's a good thing because I'm a person who owns Galahorn, and I know that at some point I'll be able to upgrade my Galahorn to just the better version of Galahorn, which is, I think, is cool. I wouldn't have to refine it.
Is the upgrade just something where you talk to a vendor and you're done, or is it a neat thing of like going into a dungeon or a raid or something and like with the fires of with the last fiery breath of Crota, you know, charge it up?
I would love to say it was the second option, Dublin.
You just talk to a guy who shows up once a week and he's like, hey, how you doing? He's paying the money, he's done. That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that is why I have a problem with it.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So the new exotics they added, right, knowing they know that what the most powerful weapons in the game are and what people like to use and what they, because they have statistics and all this. So the new exotic weapons they added, in every single case, are nowhere near as good as the exotics that came with the original version of the game. Like, Galahorn's the best rocket launcher, Syros is still the best assault rifle, Thorn is still the best pistol. Like, there's nothing in the expansion that you'd want in terms of exotics, except for the legendary weapons you get from completing the raid. But the problem is, as what we're just discovering now, legendary weapons don't scale with the content. So my best weapons are still 300 damage, where the new damage cap is 331. So they're essentially being outmoded. And when the new raid hits next year, any weapons you get from this raid are just going to be outmoded by those. And we all know that legendaries don't upgrade now, because now we see how they do it. We're wily to their tactics, as it were. We know that almost everything we get now is going to be useless or outmoded.
Sweet.
So Destiny's in a weird space right now, where the new content is only good if you like raiding. The raid itself is shorter than the first raid, much easier, and definitely, like, once you figure it out, it's a breeze to do.
Actually, yeah, two things I want to know. First, just a side note, are you aware that, I'm not sure how many, but I know for Bungie has released, basically, for some weapons, you can get, like, you can 3D print them into real life.
Hmm.
So, since you own Galahad, Galahorn, you should look that up and see if, like, there's some place in Australia that can 3D print that for you.
That would be pretty cool. I've seen some mock-ups of Galahorn. I actually really love it. Like, it is my... Bungie is one of those developers who knows how to make a gun feel powerful and good to use. Like, you play Destiny, you probably know that the guns in that game are fun. Like, it's fun shooting things in the head in Destiny.
Yes, they do a really good job of that, yes.
Yeah, and Galahorn is, if you've got one, you know how it feels to be, like, one of the most, the moment you get that weapon, it is so good that you become one of the most valuable members of any team that you're on, which is kind of crazy, because it's, I don't know. Anyway, So
anyway, second question.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Tell me about the raid. How, like, you said it's easier than the previous one, but like,
so
is it
that was
neat?
Really
is it cool?
Cool?
Is it fun?
So I have a group of people I play Destiny with. A couple of them are from Giant Bomb, but most of them are people just met online via playing with people with Giant Bomb and their friends. And we made our own guild in the game, and the guild is essentially forged around, we're all dudes who happen to play at the same time of night, because the guys from America in our group are like guys who work like night shifts or whatever, so they're on during the day, and there's like this stuff that we happen to be on the same time.
What is the name of the guild?
I think it's called the Ghosts in the Dark.
I gotta give you props just because ghosts are a thing in Destiny, right?
And darkness is a thing in Destiny too.
Darkness is also a thing in Destiny. That's really good. That's good.
So yeah, I didn't come up with a name. I think a fellow Giant Bomber came up with that name. Named B Meeson. Do a name drop right there. Anyway, right. Or B Mason. Whatever. Anyway,
the raid.
The raid. So we have a group of dudes who are united by being from. It's like semi from the Giant Bomb community, semi from et cetera. We essentially have been raiding as a group for a while because we happen to all be at the same time. So essentially for the last couple of weeks, about 7 weeks, we did the raid, the previous raid, like 3 times a week on 3 different characters each over and on normal and hard difficulty. So up to like maybe up to 6 times a week, depending what we want to do with it. So we're like a really well-honed raid team. Like we are actually... We all have some of the best, like pretty much all of us have the best weapons in the game. I mean, like 3 of us have Gjallarhorn. It's just we're a good team. So what happened was the new expansion hit on Tuesday, but they actually did really well, and that's kind of surprising how well they did it. In that the last couple of patches had all the content, so when the timer rolled over to Tuesday night, it was on. Like we didn't have to download anything, we didn't have to accept a patch. It was just go, you can do the expansion content now, which is kind of cool. So the first thing we did was jump straight into the raid.
Story beats be damned. Just go raid.
Yeah. Okay. We all just went into the raid. Like, exactly. There's this whole quest line. All this kind of, fuck it. We just went straight into the raid. All of us grabbed our top characters, our best weapons, etc. Jumped into the raid. And it was great finally doing some new content in Destiny and stuff we'd never seen before and using mechanics we'd never done before, which is cool. And the first time through it was a fantastic process of discovery. Like, you might remember, Thurbleton, that when we played Guild Wars 2, doing the dungeons for the first time was some of my favorite times, because it's like, it takes you like hours to do because you still figure it out. You have no idea where to go.
Yeah, it's uncharted territory.
Exactly, yeah. And this is the same because how Destiny approaches raids is that they give you nothing. They don't tell you, like, there's no, like, indicator of where to go. There's, like, no words even. Like, none of the enemies speak. Or there's no cutscenes or anything like that. It's just straight up, just do things, and your gameplay will decide whether you progress, especially if you're doing it the first time. So there's, like, it opens with you, like, going up to the Hellmouth, which is this massive, like, quarry in on the moon. And there's like this circle in the ground and a bridge. And this is like one of those funny things where in the pre-expansion like trailers and stuff, you see all these people like jumping into the Hellmouth. And so there's like this circle in the ground and there's these like ruins of a bridge that like break off like a little bit into the distance. And one of the first things that happens is like a bunch of my friends go, yes, we can finally go to the Hellmouth. And they like run forward and like jump off the side and die immediately. Which
nice.
Is funny.
Yep. All right.
And okay. So I was like, great. So then it turns out, like, hey, no, you have to like stand on this circle to make like this bridge slowly form and a teleporter to appear in the center. And then once it's fully formed, it'll flash and go, the attacks in the bottom left hand corner can go, the bridge is fully formed. And then you can go and you walk into the teleporter and it teleports you down, deep into the Hellmouth where there's actually that kind of warp animation which you go downwards, which is kind of cool.
Into the dark below.
Into the dark below, and you land, and it's like this like circle of light, and you're just surrounded by darkness. And it's like, okay, what the fuck do we do now? And then, so it's like this cool thing where like there's like a light in the distance. It's like, okay, we probably have to head towards that, right? We have no idea. And we start walking towards this light, and you get there, and then suddenly like some like enemies appear, like thralls. I'm not sure if you know them, but thralls appear, and then more thralls appear.
I'm aware of what a thrall is.
And then you're just like suddenly swamped by like hundreds and hundreds of thralls, and the light you'd be walking towards goes red. And if it goes all the way red, it explodes, and everyone dies. And it's like, oh shit! And so then you start again, and you like run to the first light, and you realize when you get there, there's like another light, and it's like, oh shit! So you're like running through all these enemies, and they're trying to there's like a sea of like things trying to kill you, and you're running from light to light, and then you realize like, oh shit! Because Destiny bunches of assholes, there's holes in the ground, so you have to run and dodge enemies and avoid these holes in the ground and get to the light. And when you get to the light. Another thing happens where the longer you spend in the darkness, there's an effect that slows you down more and more and more. So it's the times multiplies, so you go 1x darkness, 2x darkness, etc. At the end, you can barely walk and you can't jump or sprint. Like, so it's like this thing, and if you get near the lights, it removes that effect. So you just like run from light to light, avoid the enemies, kill as many as you can, stay alive, and at the very end, there's another circle on the ground, you just make a new bridge. And there's like this like big like corridor in the distance with a massive white light at the end, and like you're swamped by like freaking 10-foot tall like these things called cyclopses that shoot like laser beams at you, and knights with massive swords and shit, like you're holding a point, and like everyone's firing in every direction, and you're surrounded by darkness. It's like there is awesome shit that happens in that raid.
I can imagine, yeah.
It is freaking cool. So we do that. And the first thing we do, so we got through the first part of the raid. Second part of the raid is even harder. It's like really interesting mechanics of like you have to pick up swords and run across a bridge. If you don't have a sword, you instantly explode. And when you get to go outside the bridge, there's an enrolled enemy who can only be hurt by the sword. But the sword only does damage to him. It doesn't do damage to other enemies. There's like stuff to do. So the problem comes in where, because our team is a raid team, and we raid all the time, and we've gotten used to Bungie's bullshit in terms of how they like to design encounters, we actually got to the final boss of the raid in 1.5 hours.
Just for comparison's sake, the first team to successfully beat the first raid, when it got released, it took them like 13 hours.
Yes.
I don't know how long it took them to get to the final boss, but it took them 13 hours to complete.
13 hours to complete the raid.
So that's a bit of a time difference between your ragtag band of heroes who,
just our raid team and...
Who like, it's based off what you said previously, aren't even properly geared for this, right?
No, yeah, we're level 30, and it's a level... Like, when you get to the end of the raid, every enemy is level 32, so you're doing 50% damage to them, and they're doing double damage to you. Like, it's just because we have some of the best weapons. We have the best gear in the game available now, then. So now you can get new gear to actually keep up with the enemies. But even despite that, we got there within 1.5 hours. We got to the end of the raid before the world record holders for the raid by 2 hours or so. Like, the people who beat the raid first beat it in 5 hours. So we actually got there 3.5 hours earlier than them. But the problem is, actually being the final boss, that stopped us. Because all the enemies were level 32, and then you got to the point where one of the dudes had to leave for work, and they were like, alright, we'll just tap out. So, but we kind of felt robbed, because we know that... We also know that within 10 minutes of doing the boss fight, we figured out how to kill the boss, and then it was just about executing. But because we just didn't have the gear for it... Like, now we're all level 31, so we're having a much easier time. Back then we were level 30 and we just didn't have the gear for it. We were just getting swamped by like almost everything. It would have taken us like another hour or two to beat it, but that would have still been like an hour and a half before the first team in the world beat it. And that's really annoying to me, because we could have been a world's first team. But anyway, that aside, it is a case where like the stuff they put into that raid and the crafting that went into it are awesome. But then it is about half as long as the original raid, and it was only really interesting the first time we go through it, because it's all new. Now we do it, and it's like, oh yeah, we just know how to do every fight, and we do everything. We easily beat it in under an hour. And it's considering the last raid took everyone a lot longer to figure out, and was like even more diverse in its mechanics, and was about twice as long, it's kind of sad that this content is...
Also, like, curious how, like... How unforgiving was the first raid compared to the second raid?
it's interesting because Bungie made the decision to only release normal mode now. So they when the first raid came out,
opposed to Nightfall, right?
Hard mode. Well, okay. Raids just have normal and hard. The main difference between the two is that hard mode, during an encounter, if someone dies, you cannot res them. And the enemies are more powerful and all that stuff. But that's the main thing that's harder about hard mode. If anyone dies, you can't res them. Normal mode, you can just, there's a 30-second timer and you can res people. So when the original raid came out, it was just normal mode. But sorry, both modes came out at roughly the same time, if not exactly the same time. But for this raid, the hard mode's only going to come out next year. So January, I think, mid-January.
What?
I know.
Oh, okay. 2015.
Yeah.
Early 2015. Gotcha.
Yeah. It was next month, I guess I could also say.
Yeah, that's better than next year.
Well, yeah. It's
I realize whatever, it's the same thing, but...
Yeah. So next month. So we did it as a team who's used to playing things on hard, so being really careful about not dying, like just being on top of everything and being really good at playing the game, at least in PvE. Doing it this time through was just really easy. So it was a case where you could flub up like huge parts of the raid and not be a problem. So in terms of punishing, there's no real way for it to be punishing. Except for some of the mechanics of the last boss, where if like someone dies, it spawns this thing, and if you don't kill that thing, everyone dies instantly. And the rage timer for the last boss is only like 8 minutes, so you have to like execute really well to be able to beat him quickly and do it. So in terms of forgivingness, I would say this is less forgiving than the first raid, but that doesn't stop it from being easier than the first raid, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
Aside from that, so the new weapons are shit, except for the raid weapons, but they're going to be outmoded next month or in 2 months' time, which is also kind of sad because they're pretty cool. The vendors and shit, the new currencies are garbage because that's the MMO trope right there of them adding new currencies, so everyone has to rework up like fucking faction reputation and currencies to be able to upgrade the gear again. And that, even though it's bullshit, I'm not surprised by it. And
there's a reason why it's an MMO trope.
Yeah.
Replayability. I guess one other question then, just like winding down from the expansion.
Yeah.
We've always known that, like, okay, when the game came out, there's these two expansions on the way.
Yeah.
I prefer to call them DLC because expansion. This didn't feel like an expansion to you.
Yeah, this is not an expansion. This is two missions, two strikes. Sorry, three missions, two strikes, and one raid. That is not an expansion. That is just.
But have they announced anything after this after the next expansion in a couple months?
Not really.
Like there's been rumors. I'm not sure if they're official that they have begun work on Destiny 2.
It is official that they're working on Destiny 2. The interesting thing there was from documents leaked from Activision. Activision, right?
Yeah, Activision.
Yeah, Activision, they state that there is the DLC plans for Destiny are release, two expansions, big release, then two. So we fully suspect there to be after the second expansion hits, a massive like marketing campaign about the next big release for Destiny, which will probably raise the level gap again, probably to four.
Okay, so there's going to be, after the second small DLC, there's going to be another big release for Destiny 1. And then after that will be Destiny 2.
Yeah, so we're expecting more planets and stuff in that big release, not these expansions.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like it's one of those things where the only reason I play that game is to play with the people I play with the game, and the shooting is just so good. Like that's essentially it. Like the actual, it's like people play Dota in some ways, right? The game itself hasn't really changed for years. Like they add new characters and they add new weapons here and there. But the game itself is pretty much that one map over and over and over again, just playing with the people you're playing with and to be competitive. That's exactly how I feel about Destiny now, in that like the game itself, maybe they add a little bit like new maps here and there or a couple weapons here and there, but it's the people I play with and the feel of that game, that's why I play it. And I think it's fine. I think I'm fine with that. I think it's not even in my top five, I don't think, for my game of the year lists, but it's the game I've played most this year. Like I have like 30 days or some shit like that. Something ridiculous in terms of how much time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have to say about Destiny. If you like Destiny, buy the expansion. Like, I highly recommend it if you like that game. If you like playing Destiny, the new guns they added are, some of them are really great. The exotics are all shit. But except for two exotics that are really brokenly powerful, but I'll let you discover those for yourself.
Okay.
Like, brokenly powerful. Like, the exotic I have are called Ruin Wings. It's for the Titan, which makes heavy. So, note, I have Galahorn, which is a rocket launcher. Best weapon in the game. It makes heavy weapons ammo drop twice as often from enemies, and each time they drop for you to pick up twice as much. So before, I'd get two rockets maybe once or twice a mission for Galahorn. Now I get four rockets maybe once or twice an encounter with Galahorn. It's fucking hilarious. Anyway, so that aside, Destiny aside, I think it's pretty cool. If you like it, if you don't like it, don't. This is not going to change how you feel about Destiny. The other game I've been playing is far, far higher on my list, and I like it quite a bit. Persona Q.
I thought you were going to say something else.
I'll get there last, because I don't have much to say about Persona Q. If you like Etrian Odyssey, which is almost no one because people don't really know what that is, it's a first-person kind of dungeon crawler where you have to make a map as you go along, and they're really, really long dungeons that get very difficult very fast. It's a JRPG tropes, but essentially it's an Etrian Odyssey, one of those, so where normally it would be like JRPG combat and that kind of stuff. It's mixed with Persona, so it's got characters from Persona 3 and 4, and you have like personas fusing the weakness system from previous Personas with some slight twists on it. And essentially, like, it's got a lot of fan service in there, which is kind of cool. It's set in an interesting time. So it's set at a point of the story where you couldn't have made deep relationships with anyone yet. So everyone's still kind of getting to know each other in the plot. So, for example, like, you know things like, Kanji's kind of bi-curious or whatever and that kind of shit. But you don't have a girlfriend or anything like that. So, and there's no social links during this either. So it's like some of the good elements of Persona in that the writing's pretty spot on and the characters are pretty truthful to how they are the Persona. But it's missing some of the things like, well, S-links and social linking and that, and talking to people and getting to know the people is why Persona is different from other RPGs, not the combat system. So it's kind of like half the things you like about Persona plus all the things you like about Etrian Odyssey. So if that sounds attractive to you, which it does to me, it works out. It's not a Persona game. Like, this is not. It doesn't scratch the same itch. It's just a different itch. It just happens to be a good game that scratches a different itch. With characters I really enjoy and like spending more time with. But Persona 5 is the next really big thing. Like, that's the thing I'm looking forward to, not this. I was expecting this to be like my game of the year or whatever, but it's not. It's not really scratching that for me. Anyway,
cool.
Speaking of game of the year, the other game I played, and that's this past tense, because I put 74 hours into it.
Jeez.
And beat it in every way possible, was Dragon Age Inquisition. That game is awesome. Great. So you haven't had a chance to play it, have you?
No, I have not. All right. It's been something that I've been like, you know, I keep coming back to looking at, like, you know, it's the purchase button of it, but I've not actually gotten around to getting it yet. Mainly just because, like, my biggest complaint for Dragon Age Origins, the first one, was that the combat was too crazy. But this seems like it's too far in the other direction of being too easy, so much so that I've seen builds that you don't even have to press. Oh. Like, you press one button.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. So, Dragon Age is one of those things where they had a hard thing to live up to and a lot of difficult design decisions to make in order to get there. Yeah. And that, they wanted to make the game difficult in that they want the enemies to be powerful, but they also want you as a character to be able to be powerful. So they want those two things together. And very few series have actually been able to do that effectively.
Borderlands has been able to do that effectively.
Yeah, Borderlands, Dark Souls is the one that came to mind. Is a series that's very hard, but by the end of the game, if you build correctly, you can like definitely.
I would say Dark Souls it's the power scales. So like you start off weak, but as you progress in the game, the things you're fighting at your level are still a challenging thing where they will straight up one shot you most of the time.
Yeah.
But if you go back to starting areas, you're stronger.
Yeah. But also, like, the things that you're fighting at your level, which can one-shot you, you have all the things at your disposal to be able to take them on and kill them really quickly as well.
Like, yes.
It's one of the few games out there that I actually think hits that balance perfectly, which is why I think it is so lauded and why people love it so much, in that it is just so wonderfully balanced and crafted.
I guess the best way to describe it is, like, I want a boss fight to not like to be a dance.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be a bullet sponge.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I'm not sure, have you done the DLC content in that, or have you just done the core content?
Dark Souls 1 or Dark Souls 2?
Either.
Dark Souls 1, I have not been able to, I do have the DLC, but I've not been able to defeat the final. I think I fought the dragon a couple times. I haven't been able to defeat the giant hand thing. I fought them both.
Yeah, but well, that means you fought the actual best boss in that, which is Arturius. That is.
Oh yeah.
That is the perfect fight. That is the perfect boss fight. I don't think I've ever fought something like that ever.
Anybody who wants to experience the boss fight of Arturius, should check out the Giant Bomb video, which we'll put in the show notes. I'll make sure to look it up. But it's like the entire episode, which at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half, is Vinny repeatedly just banging his head against this guy and finally defeating him.
Yeah, and finally defeating him. And it is one of the most glorious events of all Giant Bomb history when he does so. Because, Vinny Caravella, man, he's Vinny. So like that is the perfect way of balancing difficulty and strength. And the reason I'm listing it is because very few other games have ever reached that balance. And Dragon Age, that's why I don't really hold it against Dragon Age, because it's such a hard thing to do. Dragon Age definitely leans much more on the side of Final Fantasy, in that it's difficult if you don't put a lot of time into maxing out, gearing out, and building out your characters to be like a particular way. Especially if you put it on a higher difficulty than normal. I played on normal because that's just how I play games. I don't mind feeling powerful. But you play higher difficulty levels, unless you build like very particularly, you'll have a very hard time with that game. And people really love playing the new Dragon Age at like really high difficulty levels because it changes how you do everything about it. But on the other side of things, you play on a normal, by the end of that game, like myself, you're essentially, I went on a romp where I did all 10 of the dragons in that game back to back to back to back to back, and not a single one of them got to my main character's health bar.
Yeah, did you, what was it, the first zone, Hinterlands, I think?
Yep.
Did you suffer what, I've heard many other people who played the game suffer of just like exploring the first zone way beyond the point of which, like, you, if you want to have a good challenge in the game, you should probably leave and go to the other zones, but they don't, like, the developers of the game never actually tell you, hey, you should leave now. And so, like, people who've gotten 100% completion go to the next level, and they're just, like, super powered.
So, no, I didn't. I didn't have that problem at all. But I did have, the reason I left the Hinterlands is, I think, indicative of a different problem with the game. And the reason why I think this is the least impressive game of the year I've had for the last about 5 to 6 years. Like, if I was looking at my games of the year for the last 5 to 6 years, all of them are better than this game. In a shocking to a shocking degree. The problem is, right, and the reason I left the Hinterlands, which is the first area of that game that you're talking about, it's the characters in that game. The reason I left the Hinterlands is because I could not stand my starting party.
All right.
Like, I was like, all these people are either boring or assholes, except for the dwarf, but I spent a bunch of time with him in Dragon Age 2 already, so I'm bored of his character. I need new people in my party. So what I did was I essentially just like looked up how to recruit everyone. And so the first thing I did was recruit as many different party members as physically possible. And to do that, you have to leave the Hinterlands and do all this like side stuff and all that kind of stuff. So actually, didn't have too much problem with that, but I definitely had a case where I think that what BioWare did here in a lot of ways was informed by Mass Effect, like to a large degree there as well. Like it's definitely a case where it's as if BioWare looked at all the criticism thrown at them and decided to make a game to refute all the criticism, rather than making a game that has a real like soul of its own, if you get what I mean.
Okay.
So the best game, one of my favorite games of all time, and easily my favorite game from BioWare is Mass Effect 2. And the best thing about Mass Effect 2 isn't the actual plot itself. It's the going out and recruiting members, spending time with those members, doing their personal story quests, and like the greater world that you discover through those interactions. So your party is why Mass Effect 2 is one of the best games of all time. It's also why I love Persona so much. It's the people you get to know in those games that make you fall in love with them. In this, it's like they went, okay, so here's like the archetypes that we expressed in Mass Effect. Let's try some different archetypes so we can do a bit different, because some of those were like criticized. So you have your masculine main like female, who's Cassandra, who's like a warrior girl with a soft side, and then you have the flamboyantly gay dude who's their first like purely gay character in a fantasy setting by BioWare, supposedly. I don't know. Then you have the first like fully lesbian character, who's this elf chick who's just kind of fucking balls to the wall crazy and weird. And then you have Black Wall, who's like your stolid knight defender character, who's really fucking boring. And then you have Solas, who's the most boring character you'll ever meet in a video game. Who's like Thane, if he wasn't a badass assassin dude, I guess. And then you have, what else? Just Iron Bull, who's just Freddie Prinze Jr. and cool.
A lot of characters. Okay, sweet. All right.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where, like, the characters they have added are, like, these are something we haven't done before, or this is an interesting twist of something we've done before, rather than feeling like characters that have their own thing. Except for the two, or some of the two I've listed, which is Dorian and Iron Bull, those are some of the best characters in BioWare games, just full stop. Like they are fantastic, and they saved that game for me. Like my final team was Varric, who's the cool dwarf that's a smart ass who you meet in Dragon Age 2, because he's still fun to talk to in Dragon Age 3, surprise, surprise. Dorian, who is a mage from Devinter, which is essentially the Roman Empire in that world. Well, not really the Roman, but it's like an empire, the English Empire. In a world where people hate magic, it is an empire ruled by mages. Who essentially have crafted an empire where everyone is in service of mages. And people are essentially bred to be more powerful mages. And Dorian is gay, surprise. So that is actually considered like a defect, because what you want is for your son to be an eligible match with a woman,
yeah,
obviously.
Culture that is, you know, is almost, you know, borderline eugenics.
Yeah. Being gay is bad.
Yes.
Yeah. And so his father, I won't go into it, but there's like things that happened to him back in Devinter that made him leave Devinter. But he comes here, and people don't see him as for who he is, they see him as a mage from Devinter. So everyone around him hates him. So not only is he gay, so everyone back at home hates him, but everyone here hates him because he's Devinter. Except, thankfully, my main character is a mage. So we, not only did I have, like, I felt like an RP reason to connect with this guy, but also, like, he's just a really well-written dude. Like, he's funny. He has, like, he's actually deep. He has, like, because of all these conflicts in his life, they actually found a way through character interactions, walking the world, that kind of stuff. There's enough, like, him being a smarmy asshole because he's played by a British guy. He's, like, the perfect smarmy British dude. But also, like, moments where, just quiet moments with him, where you can spend with him, and you can have that interaction with him. He's just, like, he is one of the best characters BioWare's ever made, and it is wonderful to spend time with him. I really wish more people get a chance. And then you have Iron Bull, who's essentially Rex over again. So if you would play Mass Effect 2, he is your Rex in this game. He is your stolid dude who's up, who fucking loves fighting dragons. Like, whenever you fight a dragon, I had him at my party every time. He's like, "This is a good day," and he's like, "Yeah!" And he like brushes it. He's just, I have like a massive two-handed sword. So, yeah, it's just, he's a really fun dude to spend time with. So because I left that original area, because I hated my original party, I found these other guys to spend the game with, and had a blast with it. But then you have these other issues, right? So a massive problem I have with BioWare in general is their approach to romance. Specifically, not saying that I...
Whatever do you mean? All, yeah. Like, love works by just giving someone the right stuff.
Yeah, until they like you enough, and their like bar goes up enough for them to have sex with you.
That's love,
which,
right?
Which is what happened with me and Cassandra. Yeah. Because I felt the need that, hey, I always romance someone in these games. I may as well romance the chick who's in your party. I'm like, okay, fine. I romance Cassandra. She had sex with me, et cetera, boobs, et cetera, whatever.
Yeah.
That is not like whatever. That's a BioWare thing. Sure. The problem is
Mass Effect thing is like, hey, the universe might be destroyed tomorrow. Let's have sex tonight.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And that sucks too. And the whole fact that I was just like, yeah, I guess I'll romance her. So I said nice things to her twice. Literally two times I chose the take a romantic dialogue option with her. And then immediately I got the, hey, do you like me? Kind of subs, like scene you get. And you either choose yes or no. And if you choose yes, like, okay. And then you do like a quest where I bought her flowers and like a book of poems and shit. And then, yeah, banged her on a mountaintop. Like, that's essentially within an hour, I was in a long-term romantic relationship with this character. That's bad. That is epically poor in terms of storytelling. Not only that, unlike Skyrim, where you can essentially like have a wife and like romance them or whatever and all that kind of stuff, and choose pretty much anyone in the world, which I really liked, whether it was executed well or not, I like how that worked out. In this game, you can only read a romance like three chicks. To the point where I was like, there's all these people you meet in the story, specifically Morrigan, who is hot in this game and totally cool because Morrigan's from Dragon Age 1. She's like this really dark kind of like character because
you never know where her true allegiances lie.
Exactly. And so she was just very, very dark in Dragon Age 1. And something that BioWare has said in interviews was that they tried to humanize her a lot more in Dragon Age 2, to the point where like you get into like her mother issues and stuff. And by talking to her, you get to like talk to her about people things. So, and her character models change, so she's even hotter now. And it's one of those things where like I wanted to romance her, and I couldn't because they haven't had the time to program the romancing, which is not very impressive for all the characters in the game. So not only was there, like, was romancing not particularly great, but the options I had weren't great. But that aside, like, that's something I don't really care about. Sure, it's a side thing. I like doing BioWare things just because it's funny to romance people in BioWare things. The problem I have is Dorian, the gay Devinter, who is the best character in the game, I just wanted to be friends with him because, hey, my Inquisitor's a dude and I could have been romancing him, but I don't feel necessarily comfortable with doing that. But I wanted to be friends because he's a really cool guy. The problem is, for 90% of the game, for almost every dialogue option I had, there was a massive option to the top left corner of the dialogue wheel with a big heart on it.
So just every turn, either your character or his character was wanting to get it on, and you were like, no, yeah.
Yeah, it was at every turn I was being, they were like pushing me towards, hey, you can romance this person. Hey, you can romance this person. Hey, you can romance this person. And to the point where like, it highlighted to me that even though they put in all this like societal and character complexity into the game mechanics itself do not support that. Because it should have realized that I was taking, like, almost every case, I was taking, like, the friendship options. I was like, yeah, he's a really cool dude. I love spending time with him. He's an awesome guy to hang out with. He's always in my party. It should be using that as cues to open up these dialogue options to create, like, interests and, like, that kind of stuff. And for other things, like, they should use that to, like, cue how you interact with every NPC. But instead, it's just like, hey, if you ever feel like you want to maybe bang Dorian as a dude, you can pick this option. And it devalued all the effort I was putting into like reuniting him with his family and all that kind of, like all the stuff I put into the character by doing his side quest and all that kind of stuff. It devalued that because at every turn it was like, hey, yeah, you're essentially increasing his like of you because you're doing nice things with him. So maybe you want to bang him. It was dumb. It felt really shitty. So yeah, I have like a lot of problems with Dragon Age. Like the combat can get really easy. You can break it. The storyline, the main story isn't that great. Barely any of the characters are worth your time. But it's just, yeah. It overall, it somehow comes together as a package just by the fact that it does have Dorian and Iron Bull and Barrack. Like those are great characters to spend time with. It is expansive. There's so much content in that game. The combat is easy but satisfying, especially because it takes effort to break the game the way I did, to where you could just hold a button to destroy a high dragon, and it was fun getting there. I had to do a lot of side quests to get the gear to be able to do that. It was fun to do that kind of stuff. It's a game where I could see the next Dragon Age being amazing, as long as they don't keep repeating these mistakes with party members, archetypes, romancing, and how limited the interactions are with what is the core of the reason people like their games, the characters themselves. So, anyway, that's my thoughts on Dragon Age. I've been spending way too much time watching, but those are the three games I've been playing and the movie I watched. It's been a pretty good year. Sadly, I won't be there for the Game of the Year stuff this year. If we record it this year, I'll be there next year, and I'll probably be lobbying for Dragon Age. It's great. Especially if you spend time with Dorian. For people out there, leave the hinterlands, recruit Dorian and Iron Bull at least, and spend some time with him because it's pretty fun.
Sweet. Yeah. I've been playing Bupkis, so we're just gonna take a break, and then go into news topics.
Cool.
And we're back with Editing Magic. Yay.
Yay.
We are going to talk about just some news topics and whatnot, and just little things here and there before calling it a day. Chief of which, last week we did not record one, record an episode, because we were all watching the Video Game Awards.
Yeah, we literally sat down to watch an episode, to record an episode, and then
at that time, I think I was still sitting down as well.
Yeah, you were. And we all realized that, hey, wait a second, a bunch of news is going to happen directly after we record this show, and that's kind of dumb. So we're like, you know what, we'll just hold off on it. And we just sat there, and that was exactly when the Game Awards.
Yes.
I was going to call it the VGAs, but it's not the VGAs.
No, they're Jeff Keighley Presents the Jeff Keighley Award, starring Jeff Keighley.
Yeah, and I was incredibly surprised, like pleasantly surprised by that thing. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So you want to break down what the hell these were, if anyone out there hasn't heard of it?
I mean, video game awards happen every year. Jeff Keighley is usually the guy who hosts them. They're done by Spike TV or various people he's worked with, but this is the first year that he was on his own, and then just, you know, made some deals with various publishers to have a bunch of ad sets, and then just do it all on the internet.
Yeah, so you previously worked with network companies and used to be broadcast on TV. Thing is, they barely got any views, because like 500,000 views or whatever. And that's bad as in one case, but because it was broadcast on TV, there'd be so much influence in, like, there'd be like music acts for people who barely know about video games, and they had interviews with people who barely knew about video games, and it just made it all worse. It was a lot of tone deaf stuff. Like, there'd be celebrities who had no place there making appearances for no reason other than to like drum up the event. And there was barely any time spent on the games, the developers of those games, and like anything that actually, it didn't feel like an award show for video games back then. It felt like the major thing that made the VGAs, et cetera, big back in the day was because there'd always be world exclusives doing it, because substantively it's a televised event that everyone watches. So you'd have things like the first trailer for The Last of Us ever was shown during a VGA, I think it was a couple years ago. What was it? It wasn't Skyrim, it was Fallout. I think Fallout was announced during one of the VGAs. So it was always an event in terms of something to watch for world exclusives. But the game show side of it always felt like backhanded, bad. It felt like, I mean, like, detracted from the experience.
Yeah.
Like,
for example, I think last year was when we had the reveal with not Destiny. It's the big space game. I'm blanking right now.
Big space game?
Yes.
Titanfall?
No Man's Sky. That's the one.
No Man's Sky.
That got its first reveal on the end of year award show.
Yeah, and the Jeff Keighley Presents award show.
Yes.
Last year. Yeah. Yeah. The No Man's Sky was freshly debuted there, and that's where it like finally got traction. And that was a main, like a big hitter at Sony events and stuff. Like, kind of amazing. So the thing is, Jeff Keighley has always really put his heart and soul to these events. And over the last years, he's like a pretty big person in the video game industry in terms of like from the editorial, like journalistic side of things. He's one of the bigger known journalists out there. Whether he does much journalism is a different thing, and whether we even going to call them journalists is another thing entirely. But whatever, he's a video gamesman that most people know. And so he had his name on this event, and people hated it. People hated the gaming half of this event because it was just such utter bullshit in most cases. So, and he's been struggling for years and years with Spike TV and all that kind of stuff, trying to get it to a point where, because the aim in the end of the day is to have a video game Oscars, to have like an event that people are proud of, and to say that this is an award show.
To have something with like with dignity and elegance, and something that the makers are interested enough to attend to and be grateful, like, you know, something they'll be excited to receive the award for, but also at the same time, something that will have the crowds of gamers and whatnot out there watching to make worthwhile as well.
Yeah, and I'm really excited for that. Like, I love how around Oscar series and all the movie podcasts start predicting who's going to get the Oscar. And and people caring about Oscars, like actors go out and try and shape their careers to get an Oscar. Like, it's a thing that the video game industry is somewhat missing. And it's a new industry, so it makes sense. And I think that this year's event was exciting to me, that even though it wasn't perfect, like, at all, but it was the closest we've ever gotten to starting that trend. And it was awesome, because that's not what I expected when I sat down to watch it. Like, we sat there, I was like, it's going to be like a fucking another Jeff Keighley show. But it was actually a really reverent, kind of really good game show. Not game show, a show about video games. it had chiptunes as the main thing. And I a lot of people shroud on that, but I actually think that chiptunes is hand in hand with gaming.
Like it is a style of music that got birthed solely because of video games.
Yeah.
Like it or not, so that is something that video games wrought and created.
Yeah. I like chiptunes. Like, some of the best soundtracks ever, like Super Meat Boy and a couple of... Anyway.
Yeah,
and VVVVV, which is still one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. So they had, like, chiptunes, and you'd have, like, Japanese developers on stage. I'm thinking of the Sony Awards. There was some Japanese guys on stage. Kojima was there, wasn't he?
Yes. Kojima got introduced by...
Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah. And then... then Kojima then introduced Metal Gear Solid's online component.
Yeah. And that's the other half of this, right?
Yeah.
So they had the Video Game Awards, and to be fair, like, there was only like a couple awards of it actually shown on stage, and most of them were done off stage, and that's kind of boring. But the other half of it is he still did the thing with all the reveals and stuff. To the point where he, at the start, he said there's going to be many, like, X-Men world exclusives for this event, and kept trumping on about the world exclusives for the event.
I can just roll through all the ones that they announced.
Go ahead.
So, and then just get your impressions. First off, they did the King's Quest, the award for most influential creator. I'll look at that person's name in a second, but they announced that they're doing an up-res of King's Quest.
I want to talk about that in two halves. The first half is I'm fucking overjoyed about that award and who got it, because I was expecting your, like, hey, this is the yearly Miyamoto gets award for being Miyamoto. I was honestly expecting that. The fact they actually chose someone who's different and actually did have a massive influence on the industry on a whole to receive that award.
Yeah, it was Industry Icon Award for Ken and Roberta Williams, the makers of Sierra Entertainment.
Yeah, and that is just really... really top shelf stuff.
That was cool.
The other half of it was the actual game reveal, which I wasn't around for.
It's cool to see at least that point and click adventures and just adventure games as a whole are having its resurgence. If only it's just up-resing the ones that people loved when they were kids. It would of course be neat to see, like, you know, new creations getting that kind of attention and fame, but, you know, whatever. Next game, Godzilla, the game.
I didn't even watch that trailer. I was like...
That was a thing. That happened.
moving on.
Banner Saga 2.
I was actually surprised by that.
Yeah, same here.
Do we know much about it aside from the trailer? Or, like, I'm excited for that product.
I mean, like, there's lots of things we could peel apart from the trailer. I mean, like, Centaur are a thing, apparently. But in terms of, like, gameplay, we don't really know too much. It's nice to see that at least they are saying they're following through with this stuff. I don't know what kind of legal trouble they're in with the whole fight with being able to say it's a saga.
What?
We've talked about this before. Candy Crush Saga. The people at King's...
Oh, fuck you.
They were taking legal action with, you know, the Banner Saga having the word saga in it. This happened when Banner Saga first came out. Yeah. It's super annoying. Tacoma from Fulbright, the makers of Gone Home. Tacoma being their next new game, which is believed to take place in space. At some space station.
Quite clearly takes into space.
Yes. That's not the one that is a space station that's in ruin. Tacoma is the one that looks kind of like Bioshock-y.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. I'm thinking of the other one then. Still, either way, I hope that they know that their strength was in the story they crafted, not the gameplay.
I'm pretty sure they know that.
Yeah, and if they stick to that, I think that I'll be really excited for this next game. That was a wonderful game. I really liked what got him.
Human Element got announced, but I'm not finding too much about it. Zombie Apocalypse.
Zombie Apocalypse? I think I blanked.
35 years after the zombie apocalypse began. I'm sorry, I'm bringing up this stuff now because I'm a lousy at preparing stuff. I think it is, it's like the end of the world thing. It's another survival clone.
I couldn't care less.
And No Man's Sky.
Yeah, No Man's Sky. It continues to be No Man's Sky.
We got to see more weird stuff. There's that Stargate portal. That's a thing there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they revealed the third way to travel in that game, which I don't think is much of a reveal, but okay.
We'll see when that game comes out.
Yeah.
But that's, for the most part, the big things that got announced or revealed.
And then your online thing. And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all in all, there's not a lot of like amazing things that got brought with this, but enough neat little stuff that it was worth watching as a whole, I felt.
Well, those are the announcements. How about those games? So we saw Metal Gear Online. What was that space game? What was the game in the ruined space station? That actually looked really cool.
One second, I'll look that up. I think that was before.
Yeah. There were actually some really cool things shown there. But the thing is, right, usually you'd have like some of the biggest exclusive like stuff ever being shown during that thing. Like, and they showed the new Batman again. I think during that thing, that was during the Sony thing. I'm getting the two mixed because the back to back. But it makes sense that this is the first time he's doing it by himself. Like, this is the Jeff Keighley. So Jeff Keighley, after spending those years with Spike TV itself, went, fuck you guys. He really wanted to make a show that is actually how he wanted it to be. And he went out and did it himself. This is the first time that he's done it. So I can definitely see why developers went there behind him. Because no one knew whether it would work out. No one knew that they'd get like 2 million, 3 million people watching simultaneously online during the show. Like, they didn't think that people would actually give a shit about this. To be fair, a lot of people were online to see it crash and burn, but I'm hoping a lot of people online to see it crash and burn would come away from it like I did, in being pleasantly and really hopefully surprised by it. But because of that, it just didn't have the reveals that they had in previous years, which is fine. And also because the industry is in a weird space right now where no game is coming out complete and everything's on fire. So I think there's many reasons why they didn't have many exclusives, so.
Okay, so before was the survival game that takes place as like cavemen and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, now it's
Adrift with a 1 and 7 eye.
That's the one in space.
Yes, I'm fairly certain.
Is that Unreal Engine 4? I don't remember, but it looked really nice.
ADR1FT. Which, I mean, it looks really nice, but it's just in my head. I remember that based off simulations in Kerbal, when a crash happens in space, it doesn't clump together like that.
Yeah, it tends to go everywhere because all that matters is momentum at a point.
Yeah.
Conservation of momentum. Either way, though.
It's cool, yeah, sure.
It's a good premise for a game. I just hope it. I was really hoping, because I got those two announcers mixed in my head. I was really hoping that was the game by the Gone Home guys, because I think they would make an excellent developer to have a game based just in a ruined space station. Oh, they'd be perfect at that. But yeah, this is sadly
they may still. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully. I
don't know. Yeah. But that's expected to be 2015. I really, really hope that Routine comes out before Tacoma. Routine being the horror game set on a lunar mission or lunar space station.
Okay. Alright.
Just because everyone like was freaked out that Gone Home was a horror game when it wasn't. I just want people to get like freaked out that Tacoma is a horror game as well.
When it isn't.
It probably won't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
I'll try and put the Tacoma trailer in the show notes.
But overall, how do you feel about the game? I really liked it. I'm happy it happened, and really want to see it again next year. What are your thoughts on it?
I felt it was worth my time. I mean, like, I didn't feel cheated at the end of it, which I can't say for other end of the year stuff. Mm-hmm.
And Dragon Age 1. Dragon Age 1, the game of the year, and I think that's pretty spot on.
They did a good job of, like, it's I realized it was only like an hour and a half long or so, something like that. And they only had like four or five people show up on stage to present an award. And then they gave like Jeff Keighley gave a few awards to people off to the side while still on camera. Yeah. But then there was a lot of other stuff that was just presented to people off camera,
which I don't like.
Yeah. That just like either have more screen time or have less awards.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Even if they have to be like Total Biscuit with his like video acceptance, that's fine. Like I don't mind if people can't make their way to a venue to be on stage. Like it's still some of those things. Like the fact that, what did he win? Like online.
It's Emerging Gamer or Trending Gamer.
Trending Gamer.
He beat Jeff Gerstmann out of Trending Gamer.
if Jeff would have won that would have been perfect. Anyway.
I guess he also beat PewDiePie, but, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But the fact that, like, that was on stage, whereas some of the awards they heard out wasn't, is kind of lame. But also, Boogie was on stage. Like, Boogie 2988, who, I don't care. People have different feelings, and I really love that guy. You saw a YouTuber on stage at an award show, a gaming YouTuber.
Yeah.
A person whose life is dedicated to video games and loves it with all his heart, was on stage presenting an award. I love that. That's fucking cool. At a proper award show. That was totally awesome. So yeah, it's really cool to see that stuff happen. And I hope he does again. Because the other half of that news is he made a massive loss on it. But
I did not know that.
Oh, he didn't make a massive. He didn't make a profit. He did not make a profit from it.
He not being Boogie, but rather being Jeff Keighley.
Jeff Keighley, yeah. Jeff Keighley didn't make a profit on it. But it exceeded his like wildest expectations, and he expected to make a loss on it, so that's not too bad. And he's hopeful to do it again, and his major change for next time is he wants bigger reveals. And if he does that, that sounds like the perfect combination. Like having good awards that are meaningful and given out well, mixed with reveals that are better than, hey, the third mode of travel in No Man's Sky is teleporting. That would be cool. That'd be really cool.
Sweet. And then I guess we'll move on to the Sony experience. A lot of that seemed to piggyback off of the Game Awards, which it was essentially Sony would like just ask themselves like, hey, how come we don't have a convention? And then they're like. The other suit said, I don't know why. And then it's like, all right, let's just have a convention. And
it's kind of funny. It's like, hey, so what do we do with this PlayStation 4 money? Well, we're clearly not putting it in the games we're making. Let's have a convention. That's the other way of looking at it. Like,
you can call that out, except they are pretty sure they're going to have another one next year, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to have one every year now. It was crazy because it was essentially an it was better than the E3 press conference. And it was at the end. It was in a time where no one else was making any form of announcements. It's kind of like another element in the death knell of E3 in my eyes. In that, I still think that needs to be an E3. I love the fact that there's a time of the year where all the big dudes duke it out for the biggest, craziest shit to give to us, which I love. But like the fact that it cold opened with 14 minutes of a gorgeous Uncharted 4 demo was awesome. Like that whole conference was awesome. Like
that was 14 minutes of Uncharted.
Like I guess to others it would look like whatever, but to me, like having more verticality, having stealth, beautiful visuals, like
all the different ways where you could just murder 50 people.
Oh yeah, that was so cool. That was so good. It got me so pumped for the next Uncharted. And the fact that Troy Baker is Noel North's older brother is perfect.
Yes, that is hilarious on so many levels. Also, did you hear what his name is?
So perfect. No, what is it? John?
Yeah, John.
Drake?
John Drake.
John Drake.
John T. Drake. I don't know if it's T. I want it to be though. So yeah, Sony is just like putting their employees in video games now. Like isn't Shuhei Yoshida in
Super Time Indie Game?
Yeah, he is in Super Time Force Ultra or whatever. He's a character.
I love how they use that as like a famous member from Sony will be. I thought it would be like Nathan Drake or whatever.
No,
but freaking. There's a cutscene of them flying to the Sony headquarters and going up to Shuhei Yoshida's desk and asking him to be in the Super Time Force, and he fires messages via Twitter as his offensive option.
Anybody who just like is on Twitter should probably consider, at least for a couple weeks, just following Shuhei Yoshida.
Yeah, he's just the one. I love Shuhei. So dope. I'm having big questions about him and his position, considering how like some of the games that have come out of Sony over the last couple of months have been kind of shit. But he's a great guy, and I love him for who he is. What was Studios in the weird spot? But anyway, yeah, that's so dumb. That's so wonderfully dumb. Uncharted looked awesome. The Order looked like trash, but apparently everyone who played it at the show really liked the demo. So that's weird.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And this, I thought it was just like, yeah, it was just back to back to back to back games, and that's really cool. It was a really good show. I just wanted to sit here and say that Uncharted 4 demo pretty much turned me on. That was awesome. Like, oh man, I'm so happy.
I
can't wait for that game. But again, there was no big announcements. Two shows.
Street Fighter V got announced. I'm just going through like the recent news, not necessarily at Sony.
Yeah, I got leaked. Conference.
A couple games got delayed. So like we know Bloodborne got delayed.
Which is good.
That game
needs more time.
Broken Age is moving to the second half of 2015. Witcher, which I thought was kind of funny. So most games that have been delayed are getting delayed up to the very last possible moment in the first quarter for because you know their shareholders still expect a profit to be in that time frame. Witcher 3, because they are not like a shareholder held company, they just delayed it to like mid-May. Which is like second quarter where they were like, yeah, fine, like that's how long it's gonna take.
I love that. Love that, but I was also kind of, I mean, of the games that have been shown recently, I've become less interested in Witcher and way more interested in Bloodborne. Because some of those Bloodborne gameplay things they've put over
the
last couple of days are fucking incredible. That game looks great. I love it. Like, I love the things they've done to the combat for the Dark Souls formula, and it looks like a good new Dark Souls. And that is so exciting. But The Witcher, the stuff they've shown for it has actually detracted for me for some reason. It just kind of seems like more fantasy Witcher stuff.
Well, we'll see when a quick look hits.
And
then I think the last, a couple of bits of news, but when Rise of the Tomb Raider came out, when that got like announced, it was said that it would be like, you know, Xbox exclusive, or then it was like maybe a timed exclusive or something, but it was kind of like, you know, they're on shaky, like shady ground of like, you know, saying what it was exactly. They have gone out and said that Microsoft is publishing it.
Well, what was this again? Sorry, which game?
Microsoft is publishing Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That means it's done, but it'll also be on PC, so it's not a big deal.
So, like, thing of like, Bayonetta 2, I guess the main thing I want to take away from this is just there's a lot of games that are becoming console exclusives that are pre-existing like IPs.
Yeah, it's crazy to me because essentially the industry has just gone to full circle. So what happened was at the start,
it was one thing. I'm blanking now, but what was the game that just came out on Xbox One? That was just running around with like slime monsters.
What?
All right, you keep talking. I'll look this up.
But But yeah, it's gone from thing with the first PlayStation, the industry was so small that to get these games funded, they were co-marketed, et cetera, and became console exclusives. So the whole idea of a console, like a big console exclusive, was massive in the PS1 and previous eras. But then you got the PS2 and PS3 / Xbox, Xbox original, the Xbox 360, etc. That period was massive because it finally got to the point where the industry was big enough that it was far more profitable to have games multi-platform. So you had like the death of the console exclusive happening because essentially all the real publishers realized that, hey, it's way more profitable to just put out your game and everything. And it just hit that perfect breakpoint of, hey, is it just cheap enough to develop a game for everything but put it out on every platform? That's awesome.
So Sunset Overdrive is where you're fighting at people who are like, you know, it's mutated from a soft drink. So slimes. Not that crazy with that description. So previously it was like it's new IPs were funded by the publishers, and now it is third party cross platform games that already have had previous game. Like Bayonetta was one thing, and then Nintendo bought them out to make the second one. But that was a case of like if they never got the funding,
it would just never be made.
Yes. Whereas Tomb Raider, that made money.
Right.
But, like, that was also the thing of, what was it? Square Enix said that, like, it was not a success for them.
It was not a success, yeah. It's because, so they had the PS2, PS3 era, the Xbox 360, and it was just a perfect breakpoint for development costs being just in line with putting out multiple platforms. But the thing about the PS4, Xbox One era is that things are now so expensive to develop, and the industry is in such a weird spot with these consoles having relatively small install bases that it's gone back around. And now you do need the console manufacturers to be putting in money into these games to make the next game. So the exclusive is back, and that is really crazy. It's just nuts, because that's why Street Fighter V is supposedly a Sony/PC exclusive. It's because they needed Sony's money to make it in the first place, which is nuts. The Xbox is the same thing with Tomb Raider. Supposedly, they needed Xbox's money to make that game.
Do you think that was the same case for Titanfall with EA?
No.
No, that was just EA being besties with Microsoft?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
EA is a third-party publisher, and I think that they don't have enough on their plate for me to think that they needed Microsoft for that. And Titanfall was such a good, well, supposedly good product. They thought they had magic in a bottle with that. So if it wasn't for Microsoft, and there's like tracked payments between the two companies, it's pretty obvious that was, I guess. But no, I think it's crazy. And that's another example, right, of a next-gen console exclusive. That means this industry is just going to get even more cutthroat as it goes along, because you'll have things like Final Fantasy, whatever, being exclusive to PlayStation again or anything like that. You have like all those old announcements. Like it used to be when Grand Theft Auto was announced for the Xbox 360, that was like one of the biggest megatons of E3 for all time, right? It was huge. Like Peter Moore walking out with a freaking 4 tattoo on his goddamn arm. Yeah, and that being a huge deal, and it's going to be that again, which is simultaneously depressing because it's sad that games have gotten so expensive, / these companies have become so inefficient that this is happening again. But it's also awesome because I love the pomp and circumstance and pageantry of it, and I'll eventually have every console anyway, so I'll be able to buy these games no matter what. But the kids out there who maybe loved do they realize they're killing the console industry? Do they realize that if we go back down the road of exclusives, more and more people are just going to just go back to PC? Like it's the fact that Street Fighter V is PS4 PC.
I think they're killing the console by way of making the console exclusive, but still being available on PC. That is what is killing the consoles. So really? Like people,
I think
like,
it has to be available on PC. Otherwise, you just wouldn't have enough people buying the game.
Yes, true. Yeah. So there, I mean, like. I think by not, they aren't giving a good enough, they're giving a good enough incentive to buy X console instead of Y.
Yeah.
But that's like, for every option of that, the consumer also has the option to just buy it on PC instead.
Yeah, exactly.
But then we're getting,
It's weird because if we believe them, and to some extent I do, that these games couldn't have been made without the console companies putting in money. It's like they're trying to fight against the tide whilst also being the tide. Like, they want to keep consoles live and vibrant by keeping the games coming to them, the big high production value games coming to consoles. But because they're putting in that money, they need the return on the investment, which means those games still have to come out on PC for anyone to buy them in the first place. So it's like, yeah, it's this weird mix of like factors that are combining to this like really interesting and in some ways scary future. That makes me wonder how much longer the big budget game is going to be a thing. Like, it has to be a thing because developers themselves want to make the next like Mass Effect. They want to have some of the greatest games of all time. They want to make those big, beautiful games, but they're so expensive. So it's the industry is never going to die. And I'm definitely with Jeff Gerstmann on that one. But it is a case where like the Street Fighter 4 5 reveal and the Tomb Raider reveal has just like shed some light on how things are changing in new and interesting ways going forward. And this industry is so fluid right now, and so it's not immune to change. It's going to change. And it's going to change a lot over the next couple of years. So.
I think something else is also like, because we are now getting far enough away from the launch of like the PlayStation and the Xbox, we might start to like, you know, we'll start to see announcements at least of these titles like Mass Effect or like, you know, these grandiose, you know, announcements because like the small team, like it takes them a while to make a game.
Yeah.
After they've like, you know, finally get their hands on those consoles to, you know,
Like the first couple of years of any console cycle is always dry because everyone is making the games. It takes years to make them, and then it's usually like the third or fourth year where you finally get your massive, big, freaking like Grand Theft Auto 4s and all that kind of stuff.
So basically, if this E3 is crap, then we need to get worried.
Yeah, we need to get really
right
worried.
Now, I'm still just like, this is normal.
Yeah, it's normal, but also different, which I kind of like because I like different, but it's also kind of bad because, hey, I'm probably never going to get to play. Well, I'll never play Rise of the Tomb Raider on my PlayStation 4. Whether I wanted to play it in the first place is probably aside, but I'd never be able to play it on the PS4. So, and then, which is fine for me because I'll probably own the Xbox. But for the kid who really liked the first Tomb Raider, doesn't have a game PC because it's too expensive, so they bought a PS4. And that sucks to be that kid who won't be able to play the sequel. But he should, because MA15 plus game. But
yeah. I mean, like, to an extent, I think this also goes back to when we talked about the Obra Dinn. Granted, like, that's probably a thing that will eventually come to fruition. This year, more than others, I've especially enjoyed checking out those things that are, like, sort of raw and in development. Because when it comes, like, less and less we'll start to, like, you know, the Mass Effects, the big things will become a reality. It's neat to try and see them while they're still being, you know, people are thinking of the ideas before they end up scrapping the project.
Yeah. Because more than half of the games that ever get into development get scrapped. So we're only seeing like a third of the games that have started development. At least. There's probably even a lower percentage out there in terms of how many games are in development now that we'll actually see come to be on a store shelf.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see those ideas being floated, definitely. And indie games is definitely a place to see that, I guess.
I guess as an excellent segue into the next topic, another great way to see games is with the new Steam broadcasting feature.
So what is this? Is this just Twitch? Is this just it going to Twitch?
It's kind of like Twitch. So with Twitch, you log on and you see like what personalities, what friends, what people, like what people you're following are streaming stuff.
Okay.
And then you choose to listen, like you choose to listen in, but it's based off who is streaming out. Mm-hmm. With Steam broadcasting, it seems to me, at least how I am taking it, as much more like, what are my friends playing? And then I can choose to watch them. So the viewer is the instigator.
I see.
There are some people who are publicly streaming, and you can, like, there's a Steam page to, like, look at the list and watch them. And that is kind of twitchy. But this seems a lot more like, I was watching a friend from Indiana who was just like, hey, you're playing Shadow of Mordor. Let me just watch you for a little bit.
Right. Yeah. But so is it built? So it's essentially building OBS or whatever it is into Steam. So you don't have to have like a third party app. It just kind of makes it work.
Yes. I think from Valve's point of view, what they're doing is letting people watch. And then from that same program, because it's Steam, giving them the option to just buy it right away.
Right. Yeah. So it's
kind of like the joke that we all thought when Amazon bought out Twitch, of having like this,
exactly.
The streamer has a button to like buy the game off Amazon. Steam has beaten them to the punch. Like there's not like any pop-ups yet, but it's in beta still. So yeah.
I think that's a good thing. I don't know. Like I think watching people play a game informs you so much more about the game. And if that makes you find games that you want to buy and play, that's cool. I'm just worried about... It's interesting because all this has two sides. It's awesome because you suddenly have even more user-generated, potentially quality content out there. The bad thing is it's doing that thing where it's diluting the market, where there's all these places to watch people play video games now. There's YouTube, there's Twitch, there's that other thing like Twitch that a lot of people use.
Hitbox.
Like some Hitbox.
Yes.
There's this now. And these communities are getting more disparate and spread out, but also each is becoming having their own personality. So it's like the Twitch community is getting more and more caustic, and this is as far as I can fucking see. The YouTube community is the YouTube community. And then you have the Hitbox community, which is usually pretty nice, like as far as I can see. And then you have Steam, which is even bigger. It's weird. Like I was hoping for everyone to congregate around Twitch in the end, and then for it to like grow and flourish. But it didn't get a chance. Like it got these like crazy content restrictions on it, and then people just broke off from it. And we haven't had like a consolidation phase.
I haven't seen too many people break off from it. It's not like they aren't crazy terrible restrictions. I mean, like the thing is, most people go there to see it live. And most of the restrictions happen on the VODs,
like
the muting and whatnot happens on the archives. Which anybody who's anybody, like any personality worth watching, has already recorded that stuff on their local drive and has posted it to a YouTube page.
Yeah. So is Twitch becoming more vibrant with time, or is it like? Because I've essentially spent the last couple months under a rock. Like,
you mean Australia?
Yeah. How has that side of the community like grown? Is it becoming?
I'm not sure how much it's grown or shrunk or not. Like that is an analytic thing for that the Twitch is probably not sharing.
I don't really mean in terms of numbers. I mean like in personality. Like you had that phase where Twitch was just a lot of people streaming, to there being celebrities on Twitch who are Twitch celebrities who people watch on Twitch. Has that progressed, or is like how's what is the state of video games, Doubleton?
I don't know what the state of video games are. All I know is that, like, since that announcement, since Amazon purchased Twitch, I have, like, I followed more people. I have noticed the hosting thing being put to use with, like, some streamers will start hosting their, like, you know, their moderators when they stream and the streamer is not streaming. Like, there are some communities that are, like, have formed, like, that were pre-existing before the purchase, and I see them vibrant still. But I mean, like, I don't know, it's Twitch. I know my own little corner of the internet. It seems to be doing okay. It does not seem to be in dire straits.
Good. Yeah. I like, I've always known, and I think the Giant Bomb community in general has been in the know about this, that the future of video games lies in video content, and the games themselves. But it's seeing how that video content has been adapted and people have been putting their different spins on it. It's kind of interesting. Does anyone use, like, the Twitch, the stream streaming is a beta now, right? It's not really a massive thing.
Oh, Steam streaming? Yeah, it is still in beta. I've watched a few people. I don't think anybody has bothered watching me while I play stuff. But really, it's just you go, like, you on the main Steam window, you go to the settings, and they've added a new tab that is broadcasting.
Right.
First you have to go into, for the account, you opt into beta participation.
Yeah.
It's broadcasting, and then just, like, once you have that enabled, it's a quick download. You just can right-click on people and invite them to watch, or you can choose to watch, and if the other person has the beta program, then yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, like,
full subsite with, like, many people who are streaming now, like, popular streams, does that have that kind of stuff? Like, what's the discoverability like so far?
I've been told there is a broadcasting thing, but I've yet to find it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I've been told that there is a bunch of people streaming. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's cool. Good news. I think it's good news, but I'm forever concerned. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just because of everything's in flux and change is bad. Change is inherently bad, obviously.
Yes, change is definitely bad.
Change is always bad.
Why did I make this decision to do a standing desk? That was a horrible change.
Yeah, you're a crazy person. That was without the decision to make a standing desk. I think it's cool. The industry's changing and it's continuing to change. That's what these last couple of stories continue to tell me, which is kind of crazy. I feel old.
Right? What are you saying?
Anything else?
No, I think we probably just get to. If you go to community and then broadcast.
Two more big pieces of news, and I didn't put them on the show notes, but they were trailers that were released recently.
Okay.
I specifically need to hear your thoughts on the Terminator trailer.
I could not care less.
Okay, for Terminator Genesis. Do you want me to have you seen it yet or not?
I have seen Dan's reactions to Terminator, and thusly, okay. I guess I saw the trailer as well. I mean, like,
what were your thoughts?
After Terminator 2. It was kind of like, well, after Terminator 2 and also the TV series, it was just like, whatever. If people let people enjoy it if they enjoy it. I don't care. People who hate it, don't watch it, and instead just watch Terminator 1 and 2 again.
That's a very good way of looking at it. I personally cannot wait to see the clusterfuck that is Terminator Genesis myself. That made me so excited to see it. From the purely perspective of I need to see that crash and burn so bad. And if it's good, all the better. Because that's like a crazy comeuppance in the end. If they somehow make like a full reboot to the Terminator series where Sarah Connor was raised by Terminator and everything's changed. It's so dumb that I love it. It's so dumb. Second one is obviously Star Wars. That trailer happened since we last had a podcast.
Really, we aren't going to go in Jurassic World as well?
Oh, I haven't. Actually, I have seen that trailer. All right, we'll do all three. What do you think of Star Wars?
It's cool.
It's cool?
How can I explain? I like the idea that they have... I like that it's not just a bunch of white people. White dudes.
I loved that the first person you see is a black person.
Yes.
I love that.
Also, not only that it is a black person, but it is the dude from Attack the Block, which is an amazing movie. Goddamn, I love that movie.
I haven't seen it yet, sadly.
It's a bunch of British people from the ghetto, effectively, the British ghetto, fight a bunch of invading aliens that look like gorillas.
Great.
That's it. And they aren't people, they're kids. and they fight off an alien invasion in an apartment.
That's great.
Yeah.
That sounds dumb.
It's a great movie. It's quality film.
I didn't realize how important a symbol that was until I saw a black dude in a stormtrooper costume. Now, fair enough. I think the fan analysis saying that he's probably just imitating a stormtrooper.
But then there's that shot of a bunch of stormtroopers in a row, and they all are varying heights.
Yeah.
So you like basically saying that these are not all clones of Boba Fett. These are people.
I love that. I love the fact that it's J.J. Abrams' interpretation of Star Wars. It's Star Wars with enough of how you know it, but enough different to know that things have changed.
I mean, like Star Trek. Everything about that trailer was like specifically put in there to either like make us feel really cool, like with the Millennium Falcon, or to raise questions, like with the lightsaber. Yeah. So
they did a great job. They did a great job with that trailer. And in general, like, yeah, it made me really excited. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the droid? I love it. I think it's adorable.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, it is the next step up from like with the original Star Wars of here's cool, crazy stuff. Now they're trying to get even cooler, crazier things that are.
Yeah.
Apparently, I've been told that's a practical effect. That's not CG.
Wow. That would be shocking if they made that. I guess it's possible. It's doable with current technology.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what's his face? That was really loved. And the other thing I really loved was, what do you think on the clearly evil dude using a clearly awesome lightsaber?
The light claymore. I think it looks cool.
I never heard it being called that. That's a perfect name for it. It is the light claymore. Yep.
Yeah.
Go.
Not knowing the purpose of the lightsaber. Like what it's like other than to stab dudes. I get that. But like the design behind, like, cause tons of fans have gone out of that. Like, that's a horrible design for a lightsaber in terms of like, it would just, someone would cut down the side of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to the first films, like the 4, 5, and 6, whenever the lightsaber struck, they didn't slide. They like,
yeah, they stuck.
Yeah. They stuck as a bit. So yeah. Not knowing how that is going to be put in a fighting style, I can't comment on like how dumb it looks. But it was definitely a neat thing of like he pulls light, like, you know, the wah, and then just second
the delay and the with the side things was just perfect.
That's definitely a way to inspire the kids, like the youths who know what a lightsaber is.
Yeah,
and then seeing that, like, that is effectively the Phantom Menace way of the double blade lightsaber.
Exactly, it is the next double blade lightsaber. It is in fact a triple blade lightsaber if you think of it that
way. Yeah, how do you one up that? JJ found a way.
I love it because so the lightsaber has been like this massive thing in Star Wars fiction, and there's like all this bullshit like pseudoscience in how. And why they fight the way they do with lightsabers. I've always loved the fact that the person, Emperor Palpatine's or Senator Palpatine's fighting style with lightsaber, and this is going to get really nerdy here for a second, so I apologize. In Star Wars, the prequel trilogy, the only person who used a lightsaber really differently was Emperor Palpatine or Senator Palpatine. And he, instead of doing like circular motions and slashing with the lightsaber to cut things in half, was far more efficient in that all he did was stab dudes. It was just stab, 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 three guys dead. It wasn't like long circular dancing motions and slowly slashing them apart. It was just stab, 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 they're dead. It was far more fast, far more brutal, far more efficient. I loved the way he used it. And I love how they created a different fighting style for the Sith in him. And the fact that this guy uses a sword with a cross guard makes me hope that they're taking that into heart. Not necessarily that he'll be, that saying it has a cross guard means he'll be using that style. Saying that because it has a cross guard, maybe this is used differently than the old lightsabers. Maybe he fights with it differently than the old lightsabers. That is exciting to me. That would be fucking cool if they like actually start diversifying how they represent both the technology and the Force itself within the next series. That'd be cool. Anyway. All right, and the third trailer is Jurassic World thoughts.
A lot of my thoughts are really just repeats of the opinions of like Idle Thumbs or what's the other, the Chainsaw Suit podcast people. Like it's, I agree with them, and I had the same thoughts they did to start off. So I'm just going to steal their words. It does a really good job. If you look at those shots by thinking of like they were recreating the events from the first two films. So like the scene where there's a truck running along and a bunch of, you know, the two-legged dinosaurs of like, they're hurting. Yeah. They're hurting this way.
The velociraptors, which aren't actually velociraptors. Yeah.
Yeah. The friendly velociraptors. So like that was a recreation of that shot when they're like going down the river. That's like a pulls from Jurassic Park 2. Like they did a really good job of sort of like painting it as if they were recreating the other ones. That's neat. The premise is kind of dumb, but at the same
time... The premise is all the way dumb,
but like, if they didn't have that dumb premise, then there wouldn't have been a movie. Like, if everything is fine, then there's no dumb movie. Like, there needs to be a point to have to... there needs to be a conflict in the film.
Yeah, so the core is that they've genetically modified dinosaurs to not want to kill humans, I guess. So they're safe.
I think it's been fairly pointed out that Chris Pratt is a dinosaur tamer of sorts. Like the Velociraptors at the end. When I first saw it, I thought the Velociraptors were running from something that Chris Pratt was running from, and they just ran past him.
That's exactly what I thought.
It has since come back that, like, while that may be the case for that specific scene, he is also a tamer of Velociraptors. Those were his, like, his buddies.
That's so dumb.
Also being said, the previous scripts for previous ideas of Jurassic World, or at least the fourth Jurassic film movie, were way dumber than this. Like one where Velociraptors had bandoliers and guns and whatnot and went in like a team of rescuing children. Was a proposed script that like almost made it to production.
Shut up. That didn't happen.
I've been told that was a thing. So the fact that this got made is
we almost had Ninja Turtles Jurassic Park. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah. But no pizza.
I'm disappointed. But no,
also, anybody
we were wrong. They weren't actually not tame and just have a normal dinosaur movie. Would that not have worked? Would that have? Is that too much like the previous films?
I mean, like if they did that, if it was just regular dinosaurs that then escaped, it would like it might as well just be a remake of the first one.
First one, yeah, but this time you'd have way more people. I loved seeing like how it was essentially it's not just opening; it's been open for a while, and you see like all these like tourists around, like looking at dinosaurs, and people have gotten the idea is that it's been around, it worked, and people have gotten bored of dinosaurs, just like they have with zoos in general, and now they need a new attraction to invite people to the island, so they made this super dinosaur. That's I guess cool, but also so dumb. I just hope that there's a scene where a T-Rex fights the super dinosaur. That's what I hope for.
Yeah. Well, it's and what someone one person's theory, I can't remember who, but I think it would work is if you never saw the dinosaur, like the hybrid dinosaur.
You just never see it.
You just never see it.
That's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but that would actually be a good like that would be a good movie then.
Would it? I don't know. Like that has it ever worked before? Like, have we ever had a movie? Oh, Blair Witch, I guess, is the only case where there's a movie where you never get the payoff.
I mean, like Alien gets close to it, but we see it at the end.
I think that's what they're going to go for. I think they're going to go for you have hints of it for most of the movie, and you only see it at the end, like Alien. That was really good. Like, I love the way he did that. Over the Alien, that's fantastic. You can also do worse than being compared to one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah. I will try to find it and put it in the show notes, but there is a fan trailer that is, they've cut out the really awesome piano music and flipped around the scenes a little bit, and it's just, it is the scenes from Jurassic World, so they didn't, like, throw in other stuff, but all you hear is John Hammond from the first movie talking about the flea circus, like the ice cream scene, I think.
Right, yeah. That's
so it's a really well-done trailer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Love it.
But yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's the trailer. Our trailer moment for this last episode of the year. Or maybe the last episode
probably
of the year.
Probably the last episode of the year.
Yeah.
One other thing, just a side note, anybody interested, Papers, Please is now on iPad.
Yeah, so is Banner Saga. Oh, I think it might be in there for a while. But Banner Saga is coming to Papers, Please, which is what might be it where I end up paying it. I had it for a while, but just haven't got a chance to play on PC.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Any other plugs you got or anything else you want to talk about?
Things to talk about? Not really. It's been a good year in video games. It's such a bad year in video games. I think this is one of the worst years in video games for a while, but that doesn't mean it's overall bad. Some pretty good games came out this year. We're not having a game of the year this year, but or at least not with me here. But yeah, it's been cool. It's been fun. Things have changed a lot. And they're going to keep changing. I guess that's where I'm sitting on the industry as well, as I've said a couple of times in the last couple, like half hour. But overall, no, it's been good. Plugs for the end of the show, which I guess we're moving on to. Watch Gods and Kings?
No, my plug is don't watch Gods and Kings. Don't.
I was surprised at how much I didn't hate that movie. It's also pretty bad. It's not a good movie. It's not a good movie.
Sweet.
Anything else? Plugs for you?
I guess a couple plugs for me, just various, you know, game dev stuff. In terms of watching people on Twitch and game creation and whatnot, there's a YouTube channel called Extra Credits, and they also do live streaming. Basically, there are some game developers in Seattle who will regularly play games and break them down. So they get like a fair amount, like 1,000 or so people watching on Sundays, I think. And they will like take questions from the viewers. And so, yeah, that's a neat thing. Also,
what do you mean by break them down? Do you mean like explain them?
So like they played, what's the game before BioShock? System Shock 2. They played that and like explained, okay, so like here's, you know, like they explain the reason why the player starts off where he is and then has to take like a right, and then how he sees stuff points out. So like, I think they played Half-Life 2 and pointed out how when you first encounter like a headcrab, for example, like in Half-Life 1, when you first encounter it, it can attack you, but you can see how it attacks because it's in a cage and it keeps trying to jump at you. So you see it's a small thing.
Oh, so they break down like game design choices,
yes,
the developers have made.
Yes.
In, oh, that's kind of interesting. So
and
what's this site again? Sorry, where are they?
Extra Credits.
Nice.
It's just a little. It's their icon is a little green thing with a like guy. It's like a playing card with hands and legs. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's on YouTube, was it?
Yes.
How long are these episodes usually?
Their stuff on YouTube is usually shorter. I'd say like 10 minutes. The streams happen fairly regularly though. Like a couple times a week they will stream.
Nice.
And that's on Twitch. The other thing is on idlethumbs.com or idlethumbs.net. Previously there was a game design thing with, maker of Gone Home and the Fulbright Company, Steve Gaynor. Which, that's a neat archive worth checking out. I think I plugged that before. But now, he's the guy that interviewed. What's the guy's name? Soren Johnson. He's done in like Civilization and a bunch of, you know, stuff like that. He interviews Rob Pardo to talk about, like, Rob Pardo is the guy who was a game designer at Blizzard. Mm-hmm. Who, like, he worked on StarCraft, StarCraft II, Warcraft III, World of Warcraft. He was working on, although he's no longer working with Blizzard, but he worked on Hearthstone as well.
Right.
Like, he's the guy who made the decision to have Overlords go super freaking slow. people who played any Blizzard games, who were a fan of WoW, anything like that, and who played StarCraft, I would suggest checking that out. It's at idlethumbs.net.
Yeah, it is not an incredible wizard guy, sadly. Unless he's a D2. Like, did he play D1? Did he make D1, D2? Or that was the only Blizzard I really love.
I don't think... I think he works a little bit on Diablo 3. Like, he talks more about, like, the design decisions. But, so here's a good example. Blizzard was aware of how successful Dota was before, like, Riot made it League of Legends.
Surprise, surprise. Like, it's hard not to be aware how... It was huge. He was...
No, like, Dota 1, they were aware it was a big thing. But at the time, they were, like, 2 to 3 years into development on StarCraft 2, 2 to 3 years in development on Diablo 3.
They stretched too thin
It was before or after Burning Crusade had happened, but, like, they were full steam ahead on that as well. And they had already lost a bunch of people after Warcraft 3 had been... Or not Warcraft, World of Warcraft had been released. Right. So... they were aware that MOBA was going to be this big thing, but they couldn't devote the amount of time to it, and so they basically sat and watched as, like, picked it up, and it became this big, you know, runaway thing.
Jeez. Sorry. Too bad. I'm pretty happy that it wasn't Blizzard to do it in the end. Mainly because we need more companies, not less companies. So.
Yeah. Anyway, those are a couple of my plugs. That's it.
Yeah, cool. Pretty sweet. So, thanks for listening to this episode, I guess. Thanks for doing it with me. Yeah. We wanted to do a show before the end.
I will try and get something out with
the rest of the crew.
Maybe not the rest of the crew. If they're free, I'll try and talk to them. We're busy this time of year, but I'll try and get something with Chat of the World, a.k.a. Fallout, as well.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We should end this. Bye.
Bye. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. Happy December week. Festivus.
Festivus, yeah.
Kwanzaa.
Festivus was like all the things. Was Festivus?
It's Festivus for the rest of us. It's the Seinfeld holiday.
Yeah, but what's Kwanzaa?
Kwanzaa is for African Americans.
But well, when they...
Yes, but Festivus is a made up thing from a TV show. Kwanzaa.
What are you talking about? Festivus is something everyone can have.
Yes, it's something proposed by Seinfeld that that is for everyone. Anyone can have that, regardless.
Doesn't
of
that make it real, Thurbleton? Isn't that just as real as religion? Have faith.
Okay, Kwanzaa. As far as I know about Kwanzaa,
it was a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Yeah,
but I do not think it is a religious thing as much as a cultural like.
Neither is Festivus.
So what, Decemberween isn't real?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that's not real.
It's made up from that's made from homestarrunner.com.
I'm just saying that all of them are truly Festivus. It is the holiday.
You know, the past few episodes I've been kind of bummed that there hasn't been something quality enough to put as a B-roll. Glad we got something this time.
There you go, for the end of the year. That's your present. That's a present from us.
Yeah. why are you still listening? God.
Goodbye, you asshole. Have a good one.